This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. You're listening to weekend programming. Thanks so much for joining us this day. And what do we have prepared for you? Well, let me tell you. First, we're going to start things off in just a few moments with another edition of Mailbox, hosted by Pavla Horáková. And, surprise, surprise, you'll find out who last month's mystery person was in that monthly quiz, so be sure to stay tuned for that. Then we're going to continue with our foodie series. American Hallie Crane is going to be visiting or having a culinary adventure this time in a Slovenian restaurant here in the Czech capital. And we're going to round things out at the end of the program with a new edition of Czech History with Chris Johnstone. The topic, how Czech researchers are probing secret Soviet-era archives in Ukraine. That's all coming up. First, though, let's get started with Mailbox. Here's Pavla Horáková.
Hello and welcome to Mailbox, Radio Prague's listeners' letters program. Thank you very much for your feedback, including reception reports. Just a reminder, our broadcasts are available on the internet, where you can listen both to the whole half-hour transmissions and individual stories. You can also tune in to Radio Prague via satellite in Europe, Africa and Asia and the Pacific on the WRN English channel 5 times a day. The current broadcasting schedule is available on our website. Radio Prague's transmissions are also rebroadcast by a number of shortwave stations, among them Radio Miami International. You can also access our programs on your mobile device. Whichever way you prefer to listen to our broadcasts, your reception reports will be verified by one of our 8 USL cards featuring industrial monuments of the Czech Republic. Now on to your mail. Deblina Biswas from India sent us this email.
On viewing my name as the Mailbox Prize winner on the 24th of January 2015, my joy knew no bounds. On January 24th itself, I had sent you an email expressing my best thanks and gratitude for selecting my entry as a prize winner. I also requested you to forward the prize through registered airmail. The email was like an SOS on apprehension that the prize might be lost in transit. With a sorrowful heart, I declared in the name of God that my first prize from a prestigious international broadcaster like Radio Prague has not arrived till this day.
We are very sorry to hear that. International Post seems to be getting ever more unreliable as far as our experience is concerned, with even registered parcels getting lost or delayed. We hope the replacement parcel reaches you safely. S.J. Agbula from Nigeria sent us this complaint.
I and my family members are regular listeners to this station. However, I want to state that I doubt the integrity, fairness, and credibility of this station in choosing the winners of its monthly quiz competition. Since 2008, I have been taking part in this monthly competition and presenting the correct answer in almost all the questions. Yet, at the end of each month, when the names of the winners are announced, my name is always absent. I wonder which criteria are used for choosing the winners. Something concrete should be done to this issue because of the good name, reputation and image which this station has built over the years.
According to my records, you were one of the winners announced on July the 13th, 2008, and in February 2009, Catherine Agbula, with the same postal address, was selected winner of our monthly competition. In those days, Radio Prague sent out 3 prizes each month to a total of 36 winners a year. With only 12 winners a year since 2010 and well over 100 listeners participating each month, you can count the probability rate of winning for yourself. Today the name of another winner will be revealed after we hear some of your answers to last month's question. Mary Krennick from the United States sent us this.
Oskar Kokoschka was an Austrian artist, poet and playwright best known for his expressionist portraits and landscapes. His father, Gustav Kokoschka, was a Czech goldsmith. He grew close to his mother, Maria Romana Kokoschka, when his father failed to provide the financial help needed for the family during his childhood. In secondary school, he found that he only excelled in art and spent most of his time reading classical literature during his other lessons. This education in classic literature influenced his future artwork. Kokoschka had a passionate love affair with Alma Mahler that began in 1912. After several years, she rejected him, but he continued to love her throughout his entire life. One of his greatest works, The Bride of the Wind, is a tribute to her. His poem, Alos Makar, was inspired by this relationship.
Deblina Biswas from India wrote,
He was born on March 1st, 1886, in the lower Austrian town of Pochlarn, on the Danube. His father, Gustav Joseph, a Czech, came from a well-known family of Prague goldsmiths. His mother, Maria Romana, came from the mountain region of Stonia. Oscar wanted to study chemistry, but was recommended for a state scholarship in 1904 from the Vienna School of Arts and Crafts. He volunteered in World War I, but was unluckily dismissed during 1915 after being severely wounded. After returning from the war, he was appointed as a professor at the Dresden Art Academy. He left Dresden after the death of his father and did not return there. Then he travelled extensively through Europe, the Middle East and North Africa during the period from 1924 to 1933. He created his best works mostly as a portraitist, but beside his activity as a painter, he wrote poetry as well. His first poetry book was released in 1908, named Die Traumenden Narben, and the illustrations inside were made only by him. He also wrote a one-act play entitled Sphinx and Strawman, and an expressionist play entitled Murder, Hoffnung der Frauen. During the period from 1953 to 1963, he was the director of the Salzburg Summer Academy School of Vision. In 1947, Oscar received British citizenship. He died in the Swiss town of Montreux on the 22nd of February of 1980.
Jarosław Jędrzejczak from Poland writes,
Oskar Kokoschka was in Poland during World War II. In 1938, when the Czechs began to mobilise for the expected invasion of the Wehrmacht, he fled to the United Kingdom and remained there during the war. With the help of the British Committee for Refugees from Czechoslovakia, all members of the OKB were able to escape through Poland and Sweden.
Hans Werner Lolicke from Denmark wrote,
Oskar joined the Art Academy in Prague against his father's will, where he developed his skills as an expressionist painter. His paintings were considered degenerate by the Nazis, so he decided to flee from Vienna in 1934, when Hitler took over. Again in 1938, he fled to UK, where he stayed and became a citizen. Later in his life, he settled in Switzerland. I had never heard about him before, but find his art very interesting. I've seen many fascinating paintings and sculptures by other artists considered as degenerate. Emil Nolde and Ernst Barlach, both related to northern Germany, not far from Denmark. But I will certainly be looking for paintings of Oskar Kokoschka.
Thank you for your answers. And this time the prize goes to Mohamed Nazi from Morocco. Congratulations, and here's a new question for you for the coming weeks. This time we'd like to know the name of the violinist and composer born in 1795 in the East Bohemian town of Ústí nad Orlicí. He studied in Brno and Vienna, where he subsequently became music director and professor at the university. For almost 20 years he lived in London. He finally returned to Vienna, where he died in 1875. Please send us your answers as usual to english@radio.cz by April the 15th. It is also the address for your questions, comments and reception reports. Please keep them coming. You can also leave your comments on our Facebook page. Until next time, happy listening and take care.
Pavla Horáková with that edition of Mailbox, and let me just echo her by saying congratulations to all the quiz winners, all of you who got the correct answers. Now, let's move to our foodie series with American Hallie Crane.
Whenever I go to a new city, one of my first tasks is to get lost on an empty stomach. There is such an incredible rush I get when on the search for something new to tantalize my palate. On one of my most recent excursions through Prague, I stumbled upon a gem unlike any other, and by far the best dining experience I have had since coming to Prague. Food Adventure is the masterpiece of two passionate foodies hailing from Slovenia. The concept is a multidimensional company made up of a restaurant, food tour, and artisanal delicacy distributor dedicated towards serving the community rustic Slovenian and Mediterranean dishes from the freshest ingredients available. At Food Adventures restaurant, Nanasita, I took my seat in a tiny dining room that felt more like a home than a fine dining affair. With just two wooden family-style tables and classic tunes playing in the background, the restaurant had a casual ambiance and calming atmosphere. I was delightfully shocked when the waitress brought me my own jug of water without even having to ask, which is a true rarity in Europe. She laid down a basket of freshly sliced homemade bread, and instantly I was put into a trance. Never before did I think bread and water could make such an impression. At Nanasita, each dish is made in-house from start to finish by the skilled hands that have been doing it for years. Soon my casual Tuesday lunch turned into an artfully crafted four-course affair, starting with carrot, ginger, and orange soup and moving on to a fresh green salad. I had never tasted produce so fresh since being in Prague, and I had to pull the manager aside to ask where they had obtained such ingredients. I soon learned that the majority of the goods used in the restaurant were selected from a handful of local farms, each visited and investigated by the owners before purchase. The amount of time and care that goes into each dish is artfully represented by delicious flavors. The special of the day, octopus goulash, was perfectly paired with hands down the best gnocchi I have ever tasted. The clouds of potato goodness melted in my mouth and brought me to a world far from Prague 6. The meal before me warmed both my stomach and my heart. Waiting for the dessert, I thought, there was absolutely no way that this tiny restaurant could have no culinary flaws, and was quickly proven wrong by a piece of skillfully crafted, sweet and tart blueberry pie. As I walked towards my metro stop away from Nanasita, my face stuck into a satisfied smile. For the rest of the day, I was telling friends and strangers all about this incredible meal that I had found out of sheer luck. In Czech, Nanasita means insatiable, which is exactly how I felt after my first time at the restaurant. I couldn't get enough. The next day, I followed the owner of Nanasita, Meti Kosets, to the Jirok Farmer's Market. She taught me about the variety of meats and cheeses hailing from Slovenia, as I munched on one of the spinach burek pastries that I had watched being handmade a day earlier. I walked away with the makings for a fabulous dinner. Fresh prosciutto, cheese, Slovenian greens, and pumpkin seed oil. And for the second day in a row, Food Adventure took my breath away. I couldn't stay away for long, so the very next day I took a stroll along the river to find Food Adventure in the center of the Naplavka Farmer's Market. Meti was serving freshly grilled calamari made to order with mashed potatoes drizzled with herb pesto. One bite and my Saturday was made. I felt like I had been far too spoiled for my own good, so I had to take a few days off before returning to Nanasita for their dinner menu. Octopus ceviche, mixed seafood with fresh pasta, and apple profiteroles. Needless to say, I had found my culinary haven. The impeccable service and a comfortable dining environment makes Nanasita the perfect spot for a lovely date night or family celebration. Food Adventure's dedication to their original concept should not go unnoticed, and I consider myself lucky to have stumbled upon it.
Okay, that was Hallie Crane with another installment of her series, An American Foodie Goes to Prague. If you'd like to comment on anything that you've heard in today's edition, please do so by writing to english@radio.cz. Radio Prague is also on Facebook and Twitter, of course, and you can also visit our site on the internet for the very latest in Czech news and look up our features and many other stories and news items on the web, radio.cz. Now, though, it's time for today's main feature. Czech historians and researchers are trying to benefit as quickly as possible from a new open access policy to the former Soviet archives in Ukraine. One lesson that has been learnt from nearby Russia is that doors that open one day can slam shut soon after. Chris Johnstone has more in this edition of Czech History.
History is written by the victors, according to the quote attributed to victor and history writer himself, Winston Churchill. And it could also be said that access to the state archives is determined by those who remain on the battlefield and take control after the fighting is over. Access for Czech historians to the archives of Soviet-era Ukraine was not surprisingly more than a little difficult, if not impossible, even after the country became independent in the early 1990s. But all that has changed in the last year and a half, with a welcoming smile and every cooperation now replacing the obstacles and cold reception given in the past to Western historians. Kiev no longer has much reason to pay attention to Russian sensibilities about the Soviet past. And so Czech researchers have begun to trawl through the former Soviet archives in Ukraine, and especially those of the security service, the SBU, to fill in some of the gaps about the thousands of Czechs unfortunate enough to feature in the secret police files. Some of those were descendants of ethnic Czechs who moved to Ukraine in the 19th century. Some were Czech teachers who visited in the 1930s and were accused of being spies. And the last batch of Czechs were those fleeing German and Hungarian occupation of parts of former Czechoslovakia, or who found themselves in the Soviet-occupied part of Poland after the start of World War II. There's also the strange story of the first transport of European Jews in 1939. That was the shipment of Czech Jews from Ostrava to German-occupied Poland and then into Soviet hands. Many ended up in the Soviet gulags or camps. Adam Hradilek of the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes is one of the Czech historians who's been trying to shed light on the treatment of these Czechs, thanks to the new access to the archives in Kiev. I asked him how the process started.
We started to search for files on Czechoslovak citizens imprisoned in Gulag camps in December 2011. And we were searching for materials on people that we interviewed, who spent some time in the Gulag camps. And that's what we actually managed to find in Užhorod. And we also started to work in Lviv in like regular state archives. And we were told by the archivist that the majority of the files stayed in the security services archive, or the archives of recent security services of Ukraine. We started to cooperate with these regional branches, but after a while we received a message from the central headquarters of SBU. And so we were told not to work anymore in there, and everything has to go through the headquarters. And it was really complicated. It was like similar situation is in Russian archives. But last March, when I went to Kiev and had a meeting with the new director of SBU archives, we found out that the mentality completely changed, and they are willing to open up the archive for us. And so since then, we have made several visits to their archive and were able to search hundreds of files on Czechs or Czechoslovak citizens who were persecuted in Soviet Union between, let's say, 1930s till 50s.
What are those cases starting in the 30s? Can you describe some of those cases?
Yeah, in the 30s, the persecution mainly affected those Czechs that were already living for some time in the Volhynia region, for example, people who moved there in 19th century from the Czech lands. But also like Czech teachers who came to help these communities with education, etc. And together with like other Soviet citizens, they faced persecution, for example, during the wave of the repressions connected to collectivization of the villages, and etc. Later on, for example, during the war, the majority of the Czechoslovak citizens that were persecuted in the Soviet Union were persecuted during the war, meaning those that escaped to the east and ended up on Soviet territory. For example, approximately 5,000 Jews who fled to the Soviet Union very often ended up in Gulag camps. Then, for example, Ukrainians living in the easternmost part of Czechoslovakia, the pre-war Podkarpatska Rus or Transcarpathia, approximately 6,000 of them escaped during the war, escaping the Hungarian occupation. And from this group, almost everyone went to Gulag camps, and they were only saved by the fact that Germans attacked the Soviet Union and the Soviets needed the men to fight the Germans, and they were released to the Czechoslovak army.
A lot of your research has been on the transport of Jews as well.
Yeah, this is really interesting part of the Holocaust era, that the fact that the first transport of the Holocaust in 1939 heading from Ostrava to Nisko, which was like on the demarcation line between the Germans and Soviets in Poland. Most of the Czech Jews who were deported to Nisko were forced to cross to Soviet Union by the Germans because the camp was still like unfinished, and so they forced most of the people to cross the border to Soviet Union, where majority of them were arrested in the Lviv region in the spring 1940 and sent to Gulag camps. And again, many of them were released. Those that survived, actually, were released later on to the Czechoslovak army.
And how do you see this research continuing? Will it stay within the sort of same area of the 30s and the war, or do you think there's a lot more material that you can look at?
Yeah, these archives are like extremely interesting source of information for historians in Czech Republic. I know of Pavel Čáček, who is doing research there on like NKVD, KGB collaborators. So I really hope to see the results of his research soon. And I strongly encourage not just Czech, but also like any other historian dealing with the Soviet era to go there and search these archives. Simply because these files not only contain like materials on their like repression, but very often they also contain materials that these people brought with them to the Soviet Union, and they were taken from them after their search, etc. So there are many photographs, documents these people had, many personal items, diaries, letters, etc.
I suppose these archives, access to these archives is all the more important because the access to Russian archives is pretty difficult.
Yes, and we are afraid that there could be the same scenario as in Russia after the collapse of the Soviet Union. For the first few years, the archives were quite liberal and open to researchers, but unfortunately the rules became much more stricter, and so that's what we are afraid of. Could happen also in Ukraine. No one knows what the situation will be there within a few years. It's really unstable there. So that's why we are trying to focus our work on this and bring as much materials as we can for further research.
But there are still gaps, though, because of the lack of access to the Russian archives. I mean, how much of the picture can you fill in from getting access to what's in Kiev and what's still missing because of you can't get to whatever there is in Moscow?
We have access to criminal files, so it's like investigation file. So we know when the people were arrested, why there are like interrogation minutes, the materials that were like stolen from them after arrest. And sometimes, like in, I don't know, maybe 30% of the cases, there is some kind of feedback from the Gulag camps, if they survived, if they were released or died. But we don't have access to, for example, their prison files, what was happening in the Gulag camps. So these files are still very hard to approach. But still, we are trying. For example, last year we managed to help one Czech professor to find out where his brother died 70 years ago in Gulag camp, and also bring parts of the file to Prague.
Those archives you were able to get, but that was...
If you are a direct relative, you can get access to parts of the file. They will never let you look into or copy all of the files. So the brother of the person I mentioned managed to receive like parts of the file, mm-hmm. including the picture from the camp just before his brother died.
And as regards the Ukrainian files, are there still some parts of the history that they don't give access to, or is it more or less complete access at the moment? Maybe there are some things that they regard as too sensitive, or that they don't want to bring up still, given the current tensions.
We didn't run into these limitations, but I'm sure because the archive is still like it's an archive of the secret services in Ukraine. So I can assume there are some materials that are sensitive and they won't be like open to us.
Listening to Czech History with Chris Johnstone. That takes us to the end of today's show. We want to thank you so much for joining us this day and enjoy the rest of your weekend.